This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
It's almost kind of like alcohol. When you get into a fight with somebody and they say, oh, I'm sorry, I was drinking. It's like, it doesn't excuse what you said or what you did. You just had the balls to say it because you were drinking. And the internet is kind of like that too. You start feeling yourself. You're like, yeah. I'm going to go in on this person. And then you look back and you realize, oh, crap, I totally misread what that person said.
Hey y'all, and welcome to Unladylike, the show that finds out what happens when women break the rules. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Caroline.
And this is our first episode of season 3.
So good to see you all again.
See you all with our ears.
Yes, we can sense you out there just downloading away.
And we haven't been in the Unladylike podcast recording studio, but we were in another recording studio.
That's right. Yeah, we have not just been sleeping on the job this whole time, this whole fall summer break thing we've had going on. We were in a studio recording the audiobook version of our book, Unladylike, A Field Guide to Smashing the Patriarchy and Claiming Your Space. So you can not only listen to us podcast into your earbuds, but you can listen to us read our book in your earbuds too.
And you can starting October 2nd when the book, the hardcover book, comes out, and also the audiobook will be coming out as well. And even if you get the audiobook, you're still going to get a PDF with all of our gorgeous illustrations by Tyler Fetter. She's incredible. The good news is, y'all, it's a good book.
We enjoyed it. We enjoyed it. I hope you do too.
And I'm so excited. But we're not here to talk about our book, Caroline.
That's right.
We have such a fun conversation to kick off season 3 because we are talking to a social justice decoder and bona fide internet celeb.
Hi, I'm Francesca Ramsey, but most people on the internet know me as Cheska Lee.
Francesca is an actress, comedian, activist, writer, and host of the MTV web series Decoded, which explores the intersections of race and pop culture. Episodes untangle topics like, is political correctness anti-white, cultural appropriation, and colorism in the Latinx community. And she recently wrote a delightful book called Well, That Escalated Quickly, Memoirs and Mistakes of an Accidental Activist.
And we wanted to talk to Francesca because her kind of fame is totally new. I mean, she's part of the first generation of people who've gotten famous on the internet. And like us, she grew up online.
What was your AOL Instant Message screen name?
Oh my gosh, it's really bad. It was Scary Cashmere Fan, which is an anagram for Francesca Ramsey. I was that kind of cool kid. You feel me? What are you doing on the weekends? I'm trying to find anagrams for my long ass name. So
That's so much cooler. Mine, Scary Cashmere Fan is so much cooler than yours truly, Too Tired 03.
Oh, wow.
Oh, AOL Instant Messenger. Kristen, you and Francesca actually go way back, right?
We do. Unladylike listeners might not know that I have a secret YouTube past. In our previous podcast, Lives Caroline, on Stuff Mom Never Told You, we also had a YouTube channel, made a lot of videos, and Francesca and I actually collaborated on a couple together. And it's just been amazing to watch her star rise, like, way beyond YouTube.
Well, and especially since Francesca really tries to use her platform for good. You know, she does an incredible job of breaking down these complicated concepts around race, gender, and power. But as you'll hear, it's not always smooth sailing if you're an opinionated woman on the internet.
Particularly if, like Francesca, you're an opinionated Black woman on the internet.
So today, we're going to talk to Francesca about her overnight internet stardom, its unexpected side effects, and why she calls herself an accidental activist.
All to find out how to use our internet powers for good in a social media culture that demands constant authenticity and perfection. Even if you don't know Francesca by name, there's a very good chance you've seen the YouTube video that literally changed her life overnight.
So there was a viral series in 2011 called Shit Girls Say, and it was super popular, where a male comedian dressed up as a woman and was going through all of the stereotypical things that girls say.
Do you know anything about computers? What's wrong with my computer?
Hey, are you near a computer?
Can you read this and see if it makes sense?
Can you look something up for me?
Could you do me a huge favor?
Could you not do that, please?
Could you pass me that blanket? Could you turn it up a bit?
Sorry, can you just turn it down?
And lots of YouTubers were doing parodies of it, and I really wanted to do a parody, but I just wasn't sure what I wanted to do, what my spin was. There were videos like Shit Moms Say and Shit Black Girls Say and Shit Girls Who Do Yoga Say. I mean, it got really specific to the point that sometimes I thought, who can relate to this video about shit girls with glasses who are also lactose intolerant but are from South Dakota say? And I really couldn't figure out what I wanted to do. And when I went home for Christmas break, I was at a party, and as the night went on, some former classmates of mine were just rattling off the most offensive sayings and touching my hair. And I thought, oh, wait a second, maybe this is the video. And so when I got back to New York, I made Shit White Girls Say to Black Girls.
Not to be racist, but.
Not to sound racist, but.
Not to sound racist.
My grandma hates collards. Wait. Is that racist?
You can say the N-word, but I can't. How is that okay?
Tanisha, what did you do to my computer?
Can I touch it? Okay, I'm already touching it a little.
Is this real?
Is this all yours?
Wait, it's not real? It is. It is. Okay, sorry.
So nappy. Kind of feels like a Brillo pad.
Oh, did that hurt? Oh, sorry. Sorry.
You guys can do so much
I
with your hair.
Uploaded it before I went to work, which was around like 7:30 in the morning. And then I got to work, and then by lunchtime, it had 1.5 million views. So I was at my desk just crying. My coworkers had no clue what was wrong with me because no one knew that I made YouTube videos. And my whole life changed.
Shit White Girls Say to Black Girls now has more than 12 million views. And only, like, 15 of those were us rewatching it for research purposes.
I mean, it is a classic, y'all, truly. And we'll get back to Francesca's tears in a second. But first, you gotta understand that when she posted that video, YouTube was just her hobby. She was a graphic designer by day and a YouTube creative at night, which she loved because Francesca says that from the moment the internet entered her life, she couldn't get enough of it.
I went to a small Catholic school and we had a computer class where we did like Mavis Beacon typing and played a little bit of Oregon Trail for you millennial kids who grew up getting dysentery for fun. And I just thought computer class was so cool. And so I begged my parents for a computer and we got one and I just fell in love. I was always poking around and trying to make stuff, whether it was I got a bootleg copy of Photoshop from a friend and I was using that to scan pictures. And so once I felt like I just had learned a lot on my own, I begged my parents to let me go to computer camp. So I went to computer camp the summer after eighth grade, and I learned how to code. And there was only one other girl at computer camp, and she had a website. And I thought, gosh, I want to be just like her and have a website too. So I decided I wanted to learn HTML. And from there, I started capturing my life on the internet before anyone I knew was actually interested or reading it.
It didn't take long for Francesca's online journal entries to turn into performative videos. She started posting to YouTube the year it came out, in 2006, just as a hobby.
And her early videos were literally just shots of her dog with terrible music in the background. But as she learned more about design and production, she poured more time and effort into her creations. She started making comedy videos, explainers, tutorials.
I was doing a lot of musical parodies because I love to sing. I love pop music. And so I did a parody of Beyoncé's Countdown, but mine was the student loan countdown, and it was all about how much student loan debt that I have.
My credit is dropping, and they still keep calling. Nothing else has changed. I can't pay you.
And I probably put about 8 to 10 hours into this video, and it's only a 3-minute video, but I had to do a lot of special effects. There's a whole sequence in the music video where Beyoncé's shirt is changing colors based on the background that she's on. So I went and I got my green screen, and then I had to get a blue turtleneck so I could key out the turtleneck. And I was very much the type of person that would set goals for myself that I didn't necessarily know if I could do it. I would be like, oh, sure, I can figure that out. And then I would be in front of my computer realizing, shit, I don't know if I actually know how to do this. But it ended up coming out really, really cool. And so there's a great little sequence where my top is changing colors as the background's changing colors. And it was one of my first big videos.
So yeah, by the time Shit White Girls Say to Black Girls came out a year later, Francesca was already poised for a big break. But she never expected her break to be that big, and it came with a lot of pressure that she definitely had not anticipated. Hence, those tears she was talking about earlier.
So you're saying you go viral, but you're sitting there crying at your desk, and yet this is kind of the dream, right?
I mean, it's a dream slash nightmare. It's so overwhelming. I mean, a million views in 4 hours. The amount of comments that were coming into my inbox, and not just from that video, it was just a trickle down. People were watching all of my videos. It was very overwhelming. And the comments ranged from, wow, this is my life, to kill yourself. So for me, it was exciting, but it was also overwhelming. I didn't know how to handle it. I'm also very emotional. I cry all the time. So it was inevitable that I was going to burst into tears.
The other part of her breakout video being this video was that this video talked about a very sensitive topic, especially for the internet: race.
Francesca had grown up in predominantly white schools. She's married to a white guy. And while she often thought about issues relating to race and racism as like opportunities for funny commentary online, she definitely didn't consider herself an educator on the topic.
But that didn't stop people in her life from approaching her as one after Shit White Girls Say to Black Girls. One anecdote, though, from the viral kind of dream slash nightmare is all of the white girls in your life that you suddenly heard from.
Yes, people were blowing up my phone to tell me that they were so proud of me, but to also ask which comments were inspired by them, which, you know, for me, I was like, wow, you are giving yourself way too much credit. But also there were some people that I had to say to them, well, you know, this was about you. Like, you said this to me the last time I saw you. There were also people that were sharing the video who I feel like maybe they felt obligated to share it because they felt guilty about saying those things to me in the past. And that was just very eye-opening for me. It just was something I never expected. And I realized, wow, I need to start speaking up for myself more and being honest when I'm uncomfortable or how I feel about certain things, because there were a lot of people who had said things to me throughout my relationship, whether they were classmates or coworkers. And I just didn't feel like I had the vocabulary to express why I was uncomfortable, but I also did not want to be the angry Black girl or make somebody else feel like they were racist or they were a bad person. And so that video started a lot of uncomfortable but clearly very necessary conversations with a lot of people in my life across the spectrum, not just women, and not just white people, like people of color who realized that they needed to advocate for themselves or they had said something to me or to someone else that was inappropriate.
Francesca even had a moment like this with her mother-in-law. Back when Fran was dating her now husband, she'd had an encounter with his mom that she honestly hadn't even been thinking about when she made the video. It was actually Francesca's first time meeting her.
I had spent the night with my now husband, and he was living at home with his mom, and she was a nurse. She's still a nurse, but she was working the night shift, so she always would come home in the morning. So I was, like, sneaking out of her house as she was coming home from work, and that's when I met her. And then she was like, oh, my God, it's so great to meet you. Your hair is so great. And I'm just like, I definitely just slept with your son and have, like, major bedhead, and now you're rubbing my head, and I don't, like, really know you. I'm not about to be like, listen, don't touch my hair. I was just like, bye, I gotta go. It's nice to meet you.
After the video came out, her mother-in-law called to apologize.
So for her, it was this moment of, holy crap, I didn't realize how inappropriate that was or how often that happened. And for me, it was a moment of, oh, crap, I often avoid being honest about how I feel because I'm afraid of making someone else uncomfortable whilst just dealing with the discomfort that they are causing. So I'm glad we had that conversation. I don't know if I would have been able to have had that conversation when it first happened. And so I'm glad that the video facilitated it later on.
But Francesca's close friends and family weren't the only ones asking her to translate race relations and explain racism.
As the video went viral before her eyes, Francesca was fielding media interview requests, auditions, and speaking gigs. And of course, she was excited that her video was making a splash, except she didn't expect the video to instantly elevate her to the voice of Blackness on the internet.
I really did not set out to be someone that talked about identity or social justice issues. It was something that I really fell into just by way of talking about my personal experiences as a Black woman moving through the world. And it was an experience that changed my life, but also put me in a position where people suddenly were asking me to speak on certain issues that I did not feel equipped to do so, but I felt like I had an obligation or a desire to speak up because I thought, well, clearly I have a talent for this. I can talk about things that are important and meaningful to me in a funny and informative way. So maybe I should just dive into this and see where it takes me.
So when you broke out with this video, like, how did your perception of yourself change? Like, and where did your identity as an activist kind of start to fit into that?
I think my perception of myself changed pretty quickly because this happens with everybody all of the time. You see someone go viral, and then very quickly they get knocked down a peg. Funny enough, it's called a milkshake duck. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but like someone goes viral and everyone loves them, and then they do something terrible happens and they say it's a milkshake duck. It comes from this very weird internet meme where the tweet says, "Everyone loves this duck drinking a milkshake," we regret to inform you that the duck drinking a milkshake is a racist. So, like, everyone loves the thing, and then they find out the thing is terrible. That kind of happened to me. Like, I got all of this attention, and then I did Anderson Cooper, and then a lot of Black people were not happy with how my Anderson Cooper interview went.
Basically, Anderson Cooper's producers wanted to do a segment about Francesca's video and what it said about race. And she was pumped for the chance to be on national television.
But in the final segment that aired, Francesca had her milkshake duck moment.
Aww.
In it, a white woman complains that she feels offended by the video and even goes as far as to say that it's racist toward white people. Here's how Francesca responded.
I'm not labeling anyone racist because that would infer that the statements were saying that someone was better than another race. And that's not what any of the statements are doing.
Francesca says if she could go back in time, she'd now respond by saying that it's not racist because, as she writes in her book, she genuinely does not believe that racism against white people exists.
But 2012, Francesca didn't make that argument on Anderson Cooper, as a tidal wave of comments from Black Tumblr made very clear.
So I went from being like, woo, I'm the best, to and everybody's saying I'm like a voice of Black women, to all of a sudden a lot of Black people being like, you got a white man and you suck and you did terrible at Anderson Cooper and you're a disgrace. And I'm sitting here thinking, wait, what did I do? What did I get wrong? And it was a very quick realization that I did not have all of the vocabulary. And I had never even heard the term microaggressions, let alone understand that the video that I had made about those little comments that white people were often saying to me were microaggressions. So people were upset that I did not know what I did not know.
Did it feel unfair at all that there is this expectation that, like, when people have these viral moments, that we expect them to be fully formed, perfectly, like, articulate, like,
oh, yes,
good in all ways. Like, we expect a lot of perfection.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, I think culturally, we do not pride ourselves on admitting when we're wrong. I'm very much of the mind that you need to know when to step back and sometimes realize that criticism, while it doesn't always come in the nicest or most friendliest package, sometimes there are grains of truth in there. And so sometimes people have said things about me that really hurt my feelings. But then when I stepped back, I realized that some of it was true. And that's partly why it hurt my feelings, and that I needed to hear it, and I needed to get my ego bruised a little bit to understand the gravity of that situation, or to just understand, like, how my words or actions had really impacted another person. And for me, what's been really helpful is creating a team of people that are my gut check. My husband, my parents, my best friend, my manager. I have people that I love and trust, and I know that I can go to and get the real deal, no bullshit answer when everybody's yelling at me and saying, you fucked up, we're really mad at you. And I'm thinking, did I screw up? I'm not really sure. I'm getting it from all sides, and people are screaming at me and calling me names and saying things that are making me really uncomfortable. I can go to my little crew of people that are my gut check, and they will give me the real deal, honest truth. Because sometimes you really have screwed up, and the anger that you are experiencing and hearing from people is very valid and real and necessary, and oftentimes part of your education.
And Francesca's not just saying that. In this case, and in lots of others, she actually does try to be honest and move forward.
After the Black Tumblr outcry, she dove right into the comments, tweets, and DMs coming her way. She did her best to ignore the haters, and she genuinely paid attention to the messages from folks saying, hey, I think you should do some homework.
A number of kind strangers reached out to me on the internet, and they said, you should read this book. You should think about why people are upset by this thing that you said. Actually read some of the things people are saying about your work. so that I could have a better understanding of this incredible opportunity that I had been afforded, where people wanted to hear what I had to say, where people were really looking up to me as a voice for change and progress, and to not take it lightly.
And thus, an accidental activist was born.
And that homework has paid off for Francesca. In 2014, she appeared on Katie Couric's Yahoo show to discuss police brutality and did not hide her feelings. Here she is addressing New York Police Commissioner Ray Kelly after he'd said that Black people needed to be less confrontational in encounters with police.
Please enlighten us, Ray. What are we supposed to do so that we can act like good Negroes and not get killed?
This time, Black Tumblr was pleased with Francesca.
It was an incredible moment that ultimately landed her on the show's Do Not Call Back list.
But when you talk about race on the internet, like, you've also got to be ready for folks to call you out right back.
And when we come back, we're tipping the tightrope of calling out and calling in online.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're back with Francesca Ramsey, who was both thrilled and scared totally shitless to go viral in 2012 with her video, Shit White Girls Say to Black Girls.
Now, before her Shit Girls Say video, Francesca had been around YouTube long enough to know the cesspool that internet comments could be.
I mean, I think you could probably speak to this as well. When you're a woman on the internet, even if you're not, you know, as a woman of color, I deal with comments that are, of course, both racist and sexist. But just being a woman on the internet, you don't even have to be speaking about important issues to get some dude explaining to you what it's really like. But the stuff that I was doing, even though I did dip into social commentary here and there, it was all pretty light. So the feedback that I would get when and if it was negative was nothing in comparison to the floodgates that were opened because of Shit White Girls Say.
So just for some context, y'all, here are a few of more than 29,000 comments that continue to stream in on Francesca's video.
Francesca is a racist. Please remove her from YouTube.
Blacks are so butthurt.
You do realize this is a racist video towards white people.
I don't say any of this shit to blacks, nor do I care if they like what I say.
This is racist towards white girls. Imagine the role reversal, like seriously.
But as Francesca's popularity grew online, she got more and more practiced at responding. She was armed with the homework she had done. She knew the word microaggression and lots of other terms, too. So she began educating folks.
She called out a big-time YouTuber for victim-blaming and slut-shaming. She called out people who wore blackface for Halloween. You name it, she's probably called it out.
Oftentimes, when you become a more public person, especially someone who talks about social justice issues, people start coming to you like Dear Abby style and saying like, hey, my cousin said this racist thing. Hey, my boss just did this thing. Hey, did you see this? People just start sending you things. And often they're looking for support, but sometimes they're looking for you to call someone out for them because they don't feel like they can do it or they don't have the profile or the reach that you do.
I definitely harbor a little bit of guilt for a couple of times doing like the power retweet.
Oh, yeah.
Where you know, where someone says something like stupid and you're like, I'm about to put you on blast. I'm going to respond to you.
And it feels
and
respond to everyone. Listen, I love a good drag. It's good for your abs. It's good for your skin. It's good for your soul. Sometimes you got to let them know. You're like, oh, I have time today. And I like, I'm totally guilty of it. And it can feel very cathartic, especially when you are dealing with abuse or harassment or just like swaths of bigotry on the internet, and it can feel very alienating. Like you're the only person dealing with it. No one knows it's happening to you. And you do that power retweet, so to speak, so that you can say like, look at what I'm dealing with. I'm not letting this keep me down. I'm going to stand up for myself. I'm going to put this person in their place. And it can feel really good. I get that.
Francesca says that the more she called people out, the more she started to wonder, is battling individual commenters actually helping to change people's minds and culture? Or is it making online discourse worse?
Yeah, like this one time, Francesca got very involved in trying to find this one guy and get him fired because he left a, granted, totally bullshit racist comment on a New York Times article, only to realize that the workplace she and hundreds of others had been calling to complain about the guy was not where the guy actually worked.
Francesca started thinking, maybe there's a better way. Instead of calling folks out all the time, what about calling them in? Engage privately. State what you think they did wrong, but also help push a dialogue forward in a solutions-oriented way, which she soon learned is easier said than done, IRL.
I was at Sundance at a screening for a web series that Jill Soloway produced. And a lot of people might know Jill Soloway as the producer of producer showrunner of Transparent on Amazon. And there was just a lot of material in the show that made me uncomfortable, a lot of anti-Black and racist sentiments. And so I asked a question about it. And my question was framed as a call-in to say, look, there were some elements of this that I was uncomfortable with. I liked the show as a whole, but I'm wondering if you think these are things that could be addressed moving forward. How do you think that that could be done to make the show more welcoming and inclusive for all audiences?
Francesca says she was genuinely trying to start a dialogue, but Jill's response was defensive and almost patronizing.
After the panel, Jill did come up to Francesca and say they should keep talking, but Francesca didn't want to talk. She didn't want the responsibility of fixing a problem that she didn't create, which, I mean, that's what's hard about a call-in, right? You're sort of taking on the mantle of explaining what someone did wrong to them. So she left, and then her attempts to call in quickly turned into a call out.
I then talked about it publicly, and there were members of my audience and people that weren't members of my audience that then took it upon themselves to go after Jill. And that was not something that I anticipated, but I had to realize, oh, crap, I have this platform and I have to use it wisely, because when you put something out there, you cannot control what happens with it.
In this case, Francesca's followers hopped over to Jill Soloway's social media accounts and called Jill a racist bitch and worse.
Oh, classic internet.
Seeing how far and how negatively her influence rippled was definitely an eye-opener. Francesca thought Jill's series had some problems, but she didn't think that that should stop Jill's voice from being heard or that her fans should attack Jill.
Now I try to be more mindful about what I chime in on, make sure that I have all of the information. Why am I participating in this conversation? Am I actually adding anything to it? And so that was something that I had to put my foot in my mouth a number of times. I also had to be the person on the other end of the call out to have a better appreciation and understanding for how, even when you have the best of intentions, they can go awry. And you can't unring that bell. Once it's happened, it's happened, and you might not be able to fix or mend the situation.
Francesca takes this stuff more seriously now, but she's still not above a Twitter drag from time to time. Besides, even though her call-in turn call-out got messy, it did have an impact.
A few years after all that went down, Jill Soloway was back at Sundance, this time at a lunch to celebrate women filmmakers. Jessica Williams of Two Dope Queens was there too, and she spoke up about women of color and trans folks. Unfortunately, things got ugly with other A-list women at the table talking over her. But Jill Soloway stood up for Jessica.
Just saying, look, as an ally, as a white person, I need to be here to stand up for a Black woman who's talking about her experiences as a woman of color.
Although Francesca couldn't prove she'd prompted Jill's defense of Jessica, she was definitely glad it happened.
And so for me, I thought, wow, this is a great example of how we can get it wrong, but then we can get it right later on. And we can learn from that time that we got it wrong. And it's important to realize that even though sometimes things go off the rails or a conversation is uncomfortable, it can potentially have a positive impact later on. And you just might not know it or might not actually get to see it happen, but it's still valuable and important to have.
It's nice to know that that things can still develop and progress and like you can still come around even after time has passed.
Absolutely. I've had people email me years later to say, remember you and I got into it about such and such, and now I realize you were actually right. And I've done that for people where I said, oh my gosh, I used to think this person was insufferable, or I thought they were so wrong about this thing, and it turns out they were actually right. And I hope it's not too little too late, but I'm going to let you know, and you don't even have to respond, but I will let you know, hey, I screwed up. You were actually right. And again, it doesn't always work, but sometimes it does. And I've been so appreciative when people have done it for me that I really try to do it for other people.
Now, Francesca still talks a lot about race and social justice on the internet, but in a little bit of a different way. She hosts Decoded, a web series from MTV that dissects stereotypes with humor and a lot of research.
And it's all right up Unladylike listeners' alley. She's put a ton of thought into busting racist, classist, and homophobic myths, and even pulls the curtain back on top-secret social justice warrior training.
There's a war going on out there, and we need warriors. Social justice warriors! Megan, are you ready to promote social justice, acceptance, and tolerance?
Yes, sir!
What did you call me?
Yes, ma'am!
You want to try that again?
Yes! Gender-neutral pronoun!
There may be hope for you yet!
In a minute, Francesca's internet life catches up with her IRL. At dinner. With Lena Dunham.
Stay tuned.
We're back with Francesca Ramsey. Her new book, well, that escalated quickly, Memoirs and Mistakes from an Accidental Activist, details the things she's learned from growing up and breaking out on the internet.
Caroline, while Francesca has been the internet's queen of callouts, Lena Dunham has really been the internet's queen of apologies after putting her foot in her mouth for saying something she really didn't need to. I mean, I don't think that you and I need to sit here and tick through all of the ways that Lena Dunham has been, quote unquote, problematic. But starting with the press even leading up to the premiere of her HBO show Girls, people, including Francesca, gave it some side eye.
So Francesca watched the show and was not happy about it. She decided to get together with a friend, and they made episode recap videos making fun of the show. And Lena.
Oftentimes, we are bolder on the internet than we are in real life. And there's no better way to be confronted by that by when you have to actually sit down and see someone face to face and think, oh, shit, if you Google me, you're going to see that I've been talking shit about you on the internet.
And that's exactly what happened to Francesca. A friend of hers invited her to an intimate dinner party where one of the guests was, you guessed it, Lena Dunham.
It was scary. I mean, we were talking about getting blowback on the internet, and she opened up her Twitter and we were like looking through her mentions, and I was pretty shocked realizing, wow, you're getting a lot of real criticism, but you're also just getting a lot of death threats and people saying really disgusting things about your appearance. And and this is really gross. And then I had to say, oh, shit, I have made negative comments about your appearance under the guise of real critique, and I don't feel good about it. And so I just felt like, okay, it's now or never. I'm probably never going to have this opportunity again to just say, like, look, I'm totally guilty of it. I have a lot of problems with the work that you've done. I live in Brooklyn, and your Brooklyn does not look like my Brooklyn on television. You've said a lot of things that I disagree with, but I just haven't always done it in the best way possible. And it's happened to me. And so I should know better, but I'm also human. And so I make mistakes.
She turned to Lena and just told her that. She owned up to the videos she'd made, and she apologized.
That's so awkward. But at least she was honest.
Yeah, I mean, and bold. And Francesca has really tried to bring that level of honesty to more and more of her work, both online and off. She wants her new book, which y'all should definitely all read, to be a guide of sorts and to help all of us with our platforms. Whether you're a 12-year-old aspiring YouTube star or a rando on Twitter, like, we could all use help navigating these online conversations and confrontations. So, in an effort for honesty, a couple months back, Francesca made a post on Instagram about her book. She wrote, "Back in February, I wrote in my journal all the steps I'd need to help make, well, that escalated quickly, a New York Times bestseller. 4 months later, I'm so proud to say I accomplished everything I set out to, except making the bestseller list."
She gets real. I mean, she talks about how disappointed she was to not make the list. And then she says, quote, "I'll admit, these are very much champagne problems. I'm not telling you this for reassurance or sympathy. I'm okay. Life goes on."
What really jumped out, too, in for me seeing that post was, yes, the honesty, but more than that, the vulnerability that comes with it. And it might partly be because, you know, I'm about to publish a book as well. But like that, I don't know, like I feel like that level of vulnerability is a rare commodity, especially like when it comes to the influencer level of Instagram and all of the perfection that comes with it, like the aesthetic perfection that comes with it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Instagram is, like all social media, a blessing and a curse. You are looking at the most perfect version of people's lives. No one is posting what it's really like, you know, when you find out that you're in collections because you forgot to pay taxes on some random thing and they've been sending the mail to the wrong apartment. I've never been in that situation before. This is a weird example that I just pulled out of my ass. Like, no one is posting that on Instagram. No one is posting, like, the real shit. It's all like, look at how cute I am. I'm eating this croissant. I wore these cute shoes. My hair looks amazing, whatever. And I'm guilty of that too, but every time I've seen someone else be honest about where they're at in life, where they've failed or where they've learned or a mistake that they've made, it's made me feel better about where I'm at in my journey. And so I feel really fortunate that I'm in a place that people can look at my work and have that same feeling.
So in the time since you've been making videos post Shit White Girls Say, have you found a balance, if there is one, between your work of calling out and creating this impactful media and also being a work in progress yourself?
I am a work in progress. I'm doing the best that I can. I feel really good about the work that I'm doing, but I also sometimes don't get it right. And so for me, I just try to be kind with myself, focus on practicing self-care, which oftentimes means not being on the internet. I've really pulled back a lot, and that's been really helpful for me. So things like going to the gym, I have been more crafty, hands-on stuff away from the computer. And again, that's stuff that I don't even show to anyone, whether it's writing in my journal or crocheting or doing collages or things like that. Like, those are things that for me are a nice way to unplug and do something that's just for myself and not about anyone else.
You know, regardless of whether you're an internet celebrity, that's a really helpful reminder. With social media, all of our lives instantly become content and clickbait. And I know that for us at least, it's also been important to actually maintain a personal life.
Which, in this episode, Spirit of Honesty, you and I are definitely still figuring out what that looks like.
Yes, texting friends back is important.
So important. I'm still...
We're getting there.
I'm in therapy with my email inbox myself. but, you know... Talking to Francesca was a really comforting reminder that all of us are works in progress. So, what is your most unladylike trait?
I curse like a sailor. And I do think that it is the spice of life. You know, it's like the seasoning that you add to a delicious meal. But I have gotten messages from people who say, oh my goodness, I can't believe you curse so much on your Instagram. And I'm just like, I speak however the fuck I want on my Instagram. but then I also get the messages from my mom who says, oh, I listened to you on NPR and they bleeped you so much. And I'm like, oh, you're right. Maybe I shouldn't have dropped so many F-bombs on NPR because they're going to bleep them out.
You got bleeped on NPR, really?
Yeah, I got bleeped on
NPR. It's a badge of honor.
And I got bleeped on C-SPAN, like, really bad.
Oh, man, I just now want to see you in a shirt that just said, I got bleeped on C-SPAN.
Yeah, that might read as I got fucked on C-SPAN.
True.
But that might be the reason that the shirts would sell really well, because they have a double meaning.
Francesca Ramsey's book, Well, That Escalated Quickly, Memoirs and Mistakes of an Accidental Activist, is out now. And Decoded is back with a brand new season. Find links to the show and the book all on unladylike.co. And stick around at the end of our credits to hear a special tweet-length pep talk from Francesca.
Okay, y'all. A couple of announcements from the Unladylike Coven. One, our book is coming out in 2 weeks, and for all y'all Atlanta hometown folks listening, we've got a couple of events already on the calendar for y'all. So check out the book info and event info all at unladylike.co, and we've dropped a super fun bonus episode today. It's about being a hot mess, and you know you want to hear it because you know you can relate.
There's always the potential that someone else is going to snatch that crown along with the wig off of your head.
Find it only on Stitcher Premium. Go to stitcher.com/premium and use code UNLADYLIKE to get your first month free.
As always, follow us at Unladylike Media and get in touch at hello@unladylike.co. What do y'all want us to do this season? Brand new season, brand new us. Actually, same old us, but new messages from you.
Abigail Keel is the senior producer of Unladylike. Nora Ritchie is our brand new associate producer. Mixing and sound design is by Casey Holford. Julie Subrin is our editor. Our music is by Flamingo Shadow, Amit May Cohen, and Sarah Tudson. Our executive producers are Chris Bannon and Jenny Radelet. Special thanks to Andy Christens.
And we are your hosts, Kristen Conger
and Caroline Urban. Next week, we're picking up our binoculars, grabbing our guides, and exploring the feminist underbelly of bird watching.
We're like the Weird Al Yankovic of World Series of Birding.
Make sure you subscribe to our show and your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a whole nest of bird puns.
And remember, got a problem?
Get unladylike. Could you just give us maybe a tweet-long pep talk for those times when you feel like, oh shit, I'm at work and I think I might need to cry?
Yeah, okay. I will say, listen, we all have emotions. They're what make us real human beings. And there's nothing wrong with a good cry. Let it out. Wipe the snot off your face and then get back to work.
Stitcher.